are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I mean, it's better than showing, like, Sandlot for the 37th time on MLB Network every day, so.
How dare you? How dare you speak poorly of Sandlot?
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Like, I everybody was going crazy on Twitter, and it's like, this guy's not on the field. Like, he's not pitching. You can't bet on the guy who's not pitching.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Tweet your puppy, girl puppy name suggestions.
It's a black lab for reference.
To Matt at MDTopFWFB. The more vulgar, the better.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
I'm great, man. Excited to talk. Well, a little earlier than normal. Normally, yeah. We do this podcast as the Monday night slate of games is on, but do it a little Monday afternoon, and there's no games ever on Monday afternoons, which is kind of bummer. But,
isn't there one game on the Saturday?
You know what? There
Milwaukee
is a game today.
Milwaukee and Baltimore, I think.
Milwaukee and Baltimore, playing. Two mirror images of each other playing each other.
Yeah, I did. I really expected, or I would have expected, Major League Baseball would schedule more day games.
Yeah,
especially. I mean, it's a holiday weekend. A lot of people have Monday off, considering the holiday is tomorrow. So,
yeah, baseball, they've really done not a great job with there should be a day game every day, in my opinion.
I would love two day games every day. Especially if someone works in the middle of the night and is up during the day.
Yep. I mean, it's better than showing, like, Sandlot for the 37th time on MLB Network every day. So
how dare you? How dare you speak poorly of Sandlot?
I do love the Sandlot, but I mean, like, I don't need to watch it in the middle of the day for the 37th time, when instead you can turn on, like, I would much rather watch Orioles and Brewers. Maybe I'm in the minority of that, but
no,
I don't know.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
So just you and me today, no special guest, no Mike, no Eli. Supposedly they have lives and do stuff during the day, which is weird, but you know, you and I are going to rock it out. Got some cool things to talk about. Before we jump in, remind everybody you can follow Matt on Twitter at MDTopFWFB. You can follow me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. And you can also nominate us for a podcast award.
You should do this.
Yes,
you should.
Nominate us for the podcast award. You can go to podcastawards.com. When you go to the nominations page, find the sports section and nominate us for a podcast award. And if you feel so inclined, nominate our good buddy Chris McBrien. He's in the entertainment section for Pop Goes Your World. So, we don't have, like, a deal or anything worked out with Chris, but I probably should, because I think he's probably got a ton more listeners than us. But
teams do it for the final vote all the time, right? For the last All-Star spot, teams link up and...
Oh, is that how shit works nowadays?
Yeah, I guess the Red Sox and Cubs are linking up. If you vote for Xander Bogaerts, they want Red Sox fans and Cubs fans, vice versa, to vote for Chris Bryant and Bogaerts at the same time. So why don't we just do that?
Let's talk a little bit about the All-Star voting. I mean, since it is kind of prevalent right now, sure. Anybody you feel that was particularly snubbed? What do you think of the voting process to begin with?
I think there's two separate parts. I think the fans did probably the best job they've done in a while.
Yes, I would agree with that.
I think the biggest egregious thing they did is Goldschmidt not starting the game over Zimmerman. But, I mean, you look at Zimmerman's numbers, I mean, he's not a terrible choice. I mean, so...
And he's having such a huge year, especially for him, and a bounce back year.
And the Nationals fans are well represented. I do think the biggest snub is Chris Bryant, because anytime you have one of the top five players in baseball that doesn't make the All-Star team, something's wrong with that. And yeah, he's not having he's got like, what, 30 RBIs or some crap like that, which shouldn't matter, but for some it does. And I do get it, because it's a statistical-based season pretty much just off this year. Past shouldn't count, but I mean, you have to see one of the top five players in the game on the biggest stage. I do think he'll get in with the final vote, but that final vote is stacked.
It is stacked, so. And you know, I had a little discussion with Bryn McCarthy.
I saw that. That was awesome.
on Twitter last night, and fantastic guy to follow, by the way. Really like funny, and actually really smart. And like one of those guys that even though he's a Dodger, I still kind of root for him as as a player because he's, you know, a really cool person. And yeah, he was bullshitting with me last night. We were kind of going back and forth on what we thought. I personally think they should take the fans' vote completely out of it.
It was interesting to see his perspective on that, being a player, you know, and what he thought about that. I agree with you. I'm on your side on that.
Though, I do agree with you. This is probably the best job that the fans have done pretty much in the history, at least in recent memory.
Definitely. I'm tired of watching the whole Kansas City Royals team against the National League and the whole Cubs, the American League. Yeah, I don't have that anymore. So.
Yeah, exactly. you know, I mean, I honestly, I don't really even watch the All-Star game very often.
I don't either. I always have to work that day randomly, which I'm fine with it. So
typically I'm on vacation, but this year my vacation is the week after the All-Star game. So, you know, I will just be missing the week after the All-Star Games game. So, So, any other thoughts? I mean, you know, I kind of like the rosters as they are.
I do too.
The one thing I think thought was interesting, and I'm trying to pull up the rosters as we talk.
I thought Yadi Molina as the second catcher in the National League was interesting because I love Yadi Molina. The players voted him.
Who else? Yeah,
so
but who else were you
that.
Going to put there? I mean,
I think Wilson Contreras is better. I think Yasmani Grandal is better.
But they haven't necessarily played better.
No, they haven't. And that comes back to my Chris Bryant argument, too. I guess, I don't know, I guess the All-Star game should be more of a showcase of the best overall players in the game, which most of the time it is. But like I come back to the Chris Bryant not getting somehow a guaranteed spot is kind of crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but like Justin Turner,
same situation with him.
You know, and
I don't
Jake,
like that beard.
You know,
so
I think Jake Lamb deserves his spot. You know, and obviously, I think Arenado deserves his spot.
Sure.
So, like third base, especially in the NL, is just super
crazy.
Deep.
Sure.
And like, I don't know. Did you think it was weird, like that the only Cub that made the roster was not on the team last year for the World Series?
Yeah. Yeah, Wade Davis. I was fully expecting Joe Maddon to, you know, kind of pick some of his boys because he, you know, as he has a right to do because he gets to pick some. But I guess they changed how that gets done this year. I guess the commissioner's office recommends picks to the manager, and I guess Joe Maddon just went with all that picks because no Rizzo on the team, which again is another reason. Rizzo's definitely a. But I guess the emergence of Ryan Zimmerman kind of knocks him out. But I think it's still fair to say. With his kind of down year, Rizzo's still a top five first baseman in the game, right? Probably top three, top two even in the National League still. So, you know, he's an interesting guy left off, and I feel dirty because I'm defending two Cubs players. But, hey, but you know, it is. Though. I think they both kind of got, for true talent-wise, snubbed. But I bet you a lot of these guys are going to make the team anyways because you're going to see,
unfortunately, see people drop out.
Trey Turner and, you know, all that stuff and starting pitchers aren't going to be able to go, so they'll probably add some position. You never know what they're going to do, but the rosters will change a lot.
And I'm thankful that they removed the this matters bullshit.
Oh God, that's
because let's be honest, it really doesn't matter at all.
Anytime starters in the game or before the end of the games, before the final pitch in the game, some of the guys that start are already on a plane. Like, what does that show you about the game?
Yeah,
they're already left the ballpark and heading back. So. Mm-hmm. And again, you have to think a lot of the guys selfishly probably just would rather not play the All-Star game and probably just want the vacation because you don't get any during the season anyways.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Let's jump into our kind of topics. And you mentioned Trey Turner. He is out probably for the next, 7-8 weeks probably.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
With a broken wrist. It is non-displaced fracture, which is good. It's better than it being a displaced fracture. But he's out, and I mean, it hurts fantasy owners a hell of a lot more than it hurts the Nationals. What are your thoughts on Trey Turner for the rest of the season? Is he droppable? And then Michael Taylor is one of the hot pickups. I mean, I guess we could talk some Brian Goodwin as well if we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But what are your thoughts on that whole situation without Trey Turner on the Nationals?
I don't think much changes for Trey Turner in the future because, like you said, it's a non-displaced, which I'm not a doctor, but I guess that's better than displaced according to what you said. And again, I think a lot of the question marks coming into the offseason or coming into the season about Trey Turner were the power output. And I think he proved people wrong a little bit. I mean, yeah, he wasn't hitting the cover off the ball, but I mean, he has 7 home runs still in 68 games, which I think is probably more than a lot of people still thought he might have hit.
Yeah,
you know,
more than I was giving him credit for.
So, interestingly, he's got 10 plate appearances shy of where he's at last year, and he's got 6 home runs less. So, obviously, last year's power spike was unsustainable, which we all kind of knew that. But it's still respectable levels. I think he probably projects out to something around 20 if he continued this pace, right? Obviously, he's not going to. But so it's a nice output for probably not 20, probably about 15, right? Because we're probably about halfway through. So, yeah, about 15, which is nice. I think that's more home runs. Like I said, a lot of guys are giving credit for. The steals are outstanding, 35 steals in 68 games. I think cutting him depends on it's a case-by-case basis. Obviously, the main goal is to not if you can avoid it. But I don't know a lot of situations out there. Depends on where you're using him on your roster. Is he an outfielder for you? Is he a shortstop? I mean, that factors in. If he's a shortstop, I would definitely try not to drop him because obviously the shortstop's a lot thinner than the outfielders this year. So it's a case-by-case basis. I obviously try not to, but I think in 12-team leagues you can cut him. I think anything larger than that I hold.
Yeah, it's hard. I think 12
it's a long time, man.
It is a long time, and I mean, we don't necessarily have that long left in the season. I mean, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
You're looking at 7. Right back before the playoffs start.
Yeah, we're looking at like the last week of August, more than likely before he returns
for fantasy playoffs. Yeah,
yeah. Right, so if you're head to head, I think in your head to head, you have to keep him.
Oh sure, yeah, absolutely.
You can't give that to your competition because whoever's in first or second in your league is snatching him.
Yeah, what's worst case scenario for the Nationals? They're still going to be in it. What say he comes up and he still can run for him, right? I mean, mm-hmm. He still gets the steals. I mean,
well, and I mean, they're going to want him to get some game action before the actual playoffs. So
absolutely,
I mean, they're not. It's not like a situation where if they were, for instance, the Braves or my Giants, where they might just go, let's just shut him down. Mm-hmm. So I mean, he's going to be in the lineup at some point in September. They're going to, like I said, they're going to want to kind of cue him up, get him ready for the playoffs. But the thing is, they are so far ahead in their division that they don't necessarily need him. And they don't, you know, I think the nice thing is for them, and the less nice thing for fantasy owners who are looking to kind of replace him, is they don't need to replace him necessarily on the roster with like a star. So they don't need to go out and get a player to play shortstop. They're just going to stopgap it because they don't want to have any sort of blockage once he is back and ready. So it's a little unfortunate. I mean, in terms of Michael Taylor, I think he's an interesting guy. I mean, he's always going to struggle with average.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he can offer kind of an interesting, you know, power speed combo, especially if he's batting towards the top, which he has on occasion. Mm-hmm. And Brian Goodwin has been batting towards the top on occasion as well. So, I mean, I think they're both interesting guys. Nobody who's filling in at the actual shortstop position, though, is very interesting at all.
Yeah, I think they got Defoe playing shortstop, if I'm not...
Who's shown the ability to steal in the minor leagues?
He's a slap hitter in the pros. Yeah, it's kind of...
But
the steals hasn't translated yet, but it might. He's still
extremely
young.
Yeah, it's young. I mean, he's only had really, really short samples, and I mean, I think he hit... I don't have his player page up. I want to say he hit like 260 in a small sample at the major leagues last year. I know he's really struggled in the small sample this year. And he's shown the ability to steal 30 bases in the minor leagues. I just, you know, more than likely, if he is on the team, he's batting eighth. You know, how often are they going to have him run in front of the pitcher? It just doesn't seem super likely.
Defoe's played 49 games this year. He's attempted 2 stolen bases, and he's been caught once.
Yeah,
But I do think Michael Taylor, we talked about this pre-show, I don't think I think with the upside he provides, I think anything other, I think 12 team leagues, you can probably leave him out there, but I think anything larger than that, I think he has to be an automatic add, right?
I think, yeah. I mean, you in this kind of day and age, and I think depending on how deep your benches are and in 12 team leagues, you might want to add him as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, like for instance, like in the Barf League, he was like my second option for pickup behind Josh Reddick.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
So, I mean, like, you know, would you rather have him or Eddie Rosario rest of the way?
Taylor.
I think I would too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's...
The power speed upside is something you're not going to find. We talked about this pre-show too. I mean, you remember the rush everyone picked to pick up Lewis Brinson, right? When he came up? I think Taylor has a similar skill set. And yeah, they're batting average.
He could be very Keon Broxton-ish.
Yes, yeah, he could. I mean, the walk rate's not as good as Broxton, but if a lot of people don't play in LBP leagues, that doesn't matter.
Yeah,
he's going to strike out 30%, but again, that doesn't matter. Without looking right now, if you don't have the player page up, I mean, he's got 249 plate appearances and he struck out 32% of the time. What do you think his batting average is?
Well, I've got it up, but
but it's a lot higher than you would think.
It's a ton higher, and it's supported by a 378 BABIP. But I mean, he's also a guy who's fast enough that he could potentially, you know, hit a higher BABIP than you normally would see. So you might see him with like a 240 to 245 BABIP.
I could see him settling in about a 320 BABIP guy. It's a higher
I think
than
even higher than that.
It's possible, I mean, yeah.
He's got a career almost 330.
Yeah, I didn't even see that. He does. Level. Yeah.
So, no. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, Zips and Steamer both have him in the 330 range.
Nice power breakout this year. Got 69 games played, 11 home runs, 9 stolen bases. His last 11 games, I was looking at this the other day, or earlier today, last 11 games, he's got 3 home runs and 4 stolen bags. I mean, you're not going to argue with that production.
Not at all.
And he's hitting 364, which isn't sustainable, but that's a small sample size. And to be honest with you, 2 months left of the season, that's a small sample size too. So what's to say he can't keep it up?
Yeah,
I'm not betting on it, but...
I'm not betting on it. And I mean, he's one of those guys that if you've got on your team, you've really got to compensate the average woes that are going to come down the pike.
Oh, sure.
There will be average woes at times with a guy like Michael Taylor. But if you like, let's say you're in like eighth place in
hard to make up average anyways.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, let's say you're just in eighth place in general in your league and you need kind of a shoot the moon kind of player. Michael Taylor's that guy right now. You know, if you just need lightning in a bottle, he's the type of guy that can offer it. He's got power, speed. He's hitting 280 right now. Who knows? What he's done is been in a short sample and BABIP inflated. But you know, we only have a short sample left. We've got half a season left, and who knows what happens? And maybe he just surprises. So. Definitely worth a pickup. Let's move on, talk about Cody Bellinger and Aaron Judge. And we're not going to talk about them in like the traditional sense because they're both fucking amazing. Let's be honest, right?
I haven't heard of either one of these guys.
Well, they both just made the All-Star team.
Oh, okay.
But I want to talk about them in terms of, you know, right now they're absolutely just destroying baseball and destroying pitchers. I mean, they're virtually ruining careers at this point so far, halfway through the season. The question becomes, is it time to move these guys? And I'm not talking about necessarily in a keeper league or a dynasty league, though, I mean, I think you could get a king's ransom in those formats. But in a redraft league, because we saw this same type of action, though, you know, it didn't last nearly as long with Eric Thames. And there were so many people who are like, oh, you got to keep him. You can't sell him. Oh, you can only trade him if you get a first-round, you know, a first-round talent. And I think I know I was on the bandwagon of I'm moving this guy now. I'm pretty sure you were on that bandwagon as well. Do we want to move Judge or Bellinger before the bottom may fall out on those guys?
I have a different stance on each one of these guys.
Okay.
I think I'm moving Judge because I think you can get any player you ask for right now for him, legitimately any player you want. And I think if you have a, you know, if you target a certain player, you need a pitcher or something, and you, I don't think asking if you have Aaron Judge, asking for like a Kershaw or Scherzer is that out of line. Do you?
I don't think it's out of line. I mean,
I wouldn't take it personally if I had those.
Yeah, I wouldn't take it personally, pitchers. And I don't want to say like I don't think you'd get that because I've seen some crazy trades. Yeah, I mean, I have, and I mean, we saw crazy trades with Eric Thames, you know, when that's happening, and so like I'm trying not to be the person that goes, I don't think that gets it done anymore, because honestly, it is so in this day and age, in terms of value, it is so hard to figure out what people consider fair value. I personally wouldn't trade Kershaw or Scherzer for either of these guys, but there are people out there that would.
Yeah, and I think a guy, I could see that happening, and I think Bellinger's a guy I'm keeping. I don't think I would trade Bellinger, but I think I would trade Judge, and the reason why is I think the Judge hype is even higher than the Bellinger hype, and I think Bellinger's a better player. I know that sounds crazy, but I think Bellinger is the guy I would bet on long-term over Judge still. And I think Bellinger is in a situation now, and they both are. They're not going to sit ever. And I just think I like Bellinger's skill set. I like the swing. I like the skills because a lot of what Bellinger's doing, yeah, the power is up. But the power is up everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I just tagged you in a thing on Facebook on Twitter, and I'm going to retweet it out.
Yeah, I'll retweet
Every league in pro ball, the power's up, right? Everywhere. So I think what's going on with Bellinger is I think what Bellinger's doing is more sustainable, right, than what Judge is doing. I think what Judge is doing on a whole with the batting average front, I think I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not predicting this to happen. But, I mean, if you had to bet on one of these two guys hitting below 200 for the second half of the season, who would you pick? It's got to be Judge, right?
That's rule.
I go Judge on that because I think Bellinger is just a better true talent.
I think I would go Judge, but I'm not banking on either of them.
Oh, I'm not either collapsing. But
I wouldn't be surprised if either of them hit 240 rest of the way. And I just think... You know, and it seems like a stupid answer because of what Judge has been doing.
It's really hard to talk about this. I agree with you.
Judge's size to me screams there has to be a hole somewhere, and it's just a matter of time before pitchers exploit it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the strike zone is just so big.
Yeah, and I have a feeling it might be up in the zone because pitchers are always told don't throw up, right? So it's hard for them to get past that mental block of beating him up in the zone. So maybe it's that.
And if you look at his heat maps, that's where it's coldest.
Is it? Cool, I didn't even know that. So how about that?
Up and away.
But that just makes sense. Being a taller guy, and umpires also don't call the high strike as much as they're supposed to, per rule, right? I mean, that's been common now, is they stay away from that. So, I mean, not that they're going to start calling that, but I do think there's a hole there. And with Bellinger, I just think Bellinger isn't as fluky for me out of Bellinger, I guess, because I think the average at 260, I mean, that's kind of what you'd expect him to hit with that uppercut swing. I mean, so I think he's more steady. So I think, and I don't think he carries as much trade value now as Judge. So I think you could trade Judge for pretty much anyone you want.
You know, see, I think it's obviously league dependent, but I think Bellinger might carry more.
Really? That's interesting.
He's got multiple positional eligibility. Two, yeah. He was the hotter named prospect coming into the season.
He was, yeah, he was.
And so I think especially in leagues, in like Dynasty and Keeper leagues, Bellinger's going to be the hotter name. In redraft, it's probably Judge, because Judge, you know, has been there whole season. He's putting up a higher average. But, I mean, either way for me, I'm moving either of these guys. If I'm getting a top 20 talent, which I think you can get for both of these guys... I'd
do
doing
that too. Yeah, you know? A preseason top 20 guy that you ranked. Yeah,
you know. Yeah, I mean, I just to me, I think, you know, and I don't think the bottom's going to fall out in the same way that it has for Thames, though Thames, I mean, is still hitting for power,
and productive in OBP formats too.
But I think that. There's nowhere to go but down for these guys. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, they've been such elite talents that it's really hard to expect for this to continue. Because, I mean, I know I, like, at one point, and I haven't, like, updated it or anything, but, like, Cody Bellinger was on pace for 58 home runs, and that's after missing the first month of the season because he was in the minor leagues.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Obviously, that's not going to be sustainable, but to change the subject a little bit on this, and keeper dynasty format, I'm not trading either one of these guys.
No, I'm not either.
Okay, just to clarify that.
Unless I'm getting a Trout or a Harper.
Fair. Yep. You got to be getting one of those two guys back. And
exception. I want like Trout, Harper. Would you trade? I mean, I'd probably trade it for Mookie.
I don't know if I would.
I would Judge for Mookie. I don't know if I would do Bellinger.
With you 100%. Yes. I'll give you that.
Kershaw. I think I would. I mean, I would do Kershaw.
I would too. And but we're still talking about, what is that, four players, five players that we would do it for? I mean,
yeah, I think I would go Kershaw, Scherzer, and maybe Sale. Just because of the pitching landscape.
I could do that. I agree with all of that. What about Chris Bryant? Would you trade him for either one of these two? He's young enough too, yes. Yeah. Carlos Correa? I don't know if I would do that.
No.
Let's see.
I might do Judge. I'm with you. I just think at some point Judge's average craters. I mean, Bellinger's average isn't great as it is. I mean, it's 260, which, I mean, in this day and age,
realistic.
Is pretty good. I feel comfortable saying if it dips, it's only going to dip a little bit, whereas, like, Judge, I feel like there is, like, I don't feel like it's ever going, it's not going to be like the 179 we saw last year in the 27 games. No. But, like, I mean, I could easily see him drop down to 240, and the walk rate, you know, comes down quite a bit. And actually, I don't know. I think I would take Judge over Correa. That's insane to me. Like, it's so hard because I ranked Judge and Bellinger like outside the top 200 coming into the season.
I think they're on the top. They were outside the top 250 for me for sure. Especially Bellinger. I didn't have Bellinger really on the map because I didn't see playing time.
I didn't either. So. I know I had Judge ranked inside my top 250, but I didn't.
He's in my top
Bellinger.
300 just because we talked about Judge preseason being unquestioned at bats. So there's nobody pushing him in right field for the Yankees outfield, which seems silly now with all the outfield depth they have. But he really never threatened to lose at bats, and obviously, you know, they didn't see this coming. But I mean, they obviously had more faith in them, and that's good because of it. A lot of guys see a 44% strikeout rate, and you're going to back off somebody, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think if I'm moving either of them in a dynasty or a keeper, I need top 5 to 7 value. And
agreed.
In a redraft, I want top 25 value, but I think you can get that. I don't think you can get necessarily the top 5 value, unless you go after one of the pitchers. Like, I think you can go get in a keeper league, or dynasty league, you can go get a Kershaw, a Scherzer, a Sale, and I would go and do that. But I don't think you're going to get Trout or Harper.
I'm not, no argument here.
So let's move on and talk about Aaron Nola. He's been very confounding to fantasy owners. And that I'm one of those guys who really bought in this year, and I probably shouldn't have given his injury history. But what are your thoughts so far on Aaron Nola?
He was off my draft board coming into the season. Last year he had a UCL sprain and a low-grade flexor sprain in his right elbow. Being a right-handed pitcher, obviously that's troublesome. And the biggest predictor of injuries is injuries. And he's kind of the guy that he was rumored to need Tommy John, and they kind of did the rehab and rest thing as opposed to the surgery. And how often does that work? Well, maybe it's worked here.
Maybe it hasn't. I mean,
maybe it hasn't.
It only works until it doesn't.
And the problem with the Phillies now is, I'm just speculating ahead, but I mean, their timeline for winning is what, 2 years from now, and maybe by that time, then hopefully his elbow doesn't break by then. You know what I mean? So maybe they should have just bit the bullet, but that's easier to say that than do it. But with Nola, man, the command is always come and gone. The curveball is a hell of a pitch. He's already kind of exceeded expectations coming out of LSU. He was looked at as a safe middle rotation guy, and I think he's shown flashes of being better than that. But another interesting thing, too, in 2016, I can see why you were in. if you take the injury history out, which you can't, but like if you say you downgrade it, because that's personal, that's entirely realistic to downgrade that.
And my argument for a guy like Nola is every pitcher has injury risk. I mean,
and you're not wrong.
You know, I mean, look what's happened this year. I mean, the one guy we said was the most safe and would never got injured on a goddamn dirt bike.
Yeah, that's crazy. But the thing with Nola, I mean, you look at the underlying statistics, right? He had a 4.78 ERA last year. Okay, that's bad for that. But you look at that FIP and XFIP, they're both at 3.08. Now, that's a significant difference. You look at the ground balls, he's more ground balls than fly balls in that park. Home run per fly ball seemed, you know, in line. Left on base percentage was a little low, so that might inflate the ERA. It perfectly explains the ERA FIP difference possibly right there. But the thing that's, you know, the strikeouts have taken a significant step forward. He's losing a strikeout per nine. The walks have jumped up about a little more than a half batter per nine. That's a nice jump. Home runs are up, but they're up everywhere. I'm not too worried about that. His home runs are probably the same, to be honest, when you factor in the difference between this year and even last year. But the injury history scared me off, and there was just so many. He was going in an area where there were just so many other pitchers I was intrigued by. I remember specifically just writing him off because I'd rather have the young guys from Pittsburgh, which one of them has worked out, one hasn't. I would rather have, you know, other things like that than use a pick on Nola, because there's a lot of other guys going when he was going that I preferred at that spot.
Yeah.
And the injury history kind of wrote me off.
And I think that's fair. I mean, I definitely went with a little bit more risk approach, especially because I typically was grabbing one of kind of the studs at the top of the, you know, for the top of my rotation. And so I was pairing him with a guy like Kershaw, with a guy like Kluber, with a guy like Sale.
Good plan. I mean,
yeah. No. If it works out, you know, I mean, I think one of the two leagues I have him in is a league where I drafted like the entire Phillies pitching staff on accident.
Yeah.
Like I got Eichhoff and I got Velasquez.
Hey, that wasn't bad going in.
It seemed great at the time, and now it looks absolutely atrocious. It's one.
I pulled up the ADP from preseason, and these are just the guys within. Aaron Nola was the 192nd pick overall on NFBC data. These are just within 20 picks of him preseason. I would have much rather had Sean Manaea, Julio Urias. That's a push. Matt Moore, John Gray, Vince Velasquez, Steven Matz, Jake Odorizzi, Michael Pineda, Jay Happ, Jeff Samardzija, Jared Eichhoff, Alex Reyes, Robbie Ray, Carlos Rodon, Matt Shoemaker. They're all within 20 picks of him. You can make an argument where you'd rather have that bottom half of that group after him anyways. You know what I mean? And that's kind of where I was at for that.
Yeah, I think going forward, I'm still kind of buying on him. Because I don't think the numbers are good enough where people are really going to be kind of scared off. And I think, he seems to be healthy now. His swinging strike rate is fine. He's getting ahead of batters better than he did last year. The only thing he's not doing is getting, like, the swings and misses that he was getting the last 2 years outside of the zone. And that's the only thing that troubles me a little bit.
Stuff might be not as sharp.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like maybe the curve isn't getting quite as much movement as it was.
Possible.
But I mean, you know, one of the issues he had last year was his fastball was awful. His fastball is back to being closer to league average pitch, maybe a little bit better than league average. And the changeup is what's taken a step forward, and that's what's encouraging to me, because he's a guy who's kind of had a poor changeup in the past, and mm-hmm. when you've got, you know, a average fastball, a real nice curve, but a crappy third pitch, it kind of leaves you, you know, sitting there. But if the change is taking a step forward this year, and it appears to have, I think he could really start putting things together. June was his best month so far this season. Strikeout percentage is up. His ERA is the best he's had, and his FIP and XFIP are the best this month, as it's been all season. So I think it might be time to buy on Aaron Nola.
To play the other side of the coin, I can see that the velocity is back up to pre-elbow injury levels. Mm-hmm. Preseason hype was a lot different too. I pulled up his page on FanGraphs, and one of the top hits on there is Alex Chamberlain's. We love a friend of the podcast, Alex Chamberlain, his bold prediction article, Aaron Nola is a top 10 starting pitcher. And he lays out the argument for it. Go read it. It's still valid. And you can see why. You know, the strand rate, the BABIP were all crazy. The injury was, if you didn't think anything of it, you could easily see why. And he's kind of still the same. Nothing's really changed.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that argument, but I don't know. I feel like his negative pitches are becoming better. You know, slider's better this year, his changeup better this year, his fastball's better this year. I don't think he's a top 10 guy, you know, anything.
No,
you know,
he's
and those
prediction.
Are like bold predictions, yeah. Which I believe, and I'd have to like double check, but I believe I'm absolutely fucking killing this year.
I'm sure you are. I can think of two or three you got right. Yeah.
I can think of three off the top of my head that like are total busts because I picked Andrew Tolles for NL Rookie of the Year, Bradley Zimmer.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a half point for that because it wasn't your fault he got hurt.
Yeah, but I mean, he wouldn't, even if he hadn't gotten hurt.
It wasn't earlier in the year, though.
I mean,
yeah.
he wasn't winning. Bradley Zimmer, who would be in the conversation if it not for the fact that Aaron Judge is just ripping the cover off the ball. yeah. And I picked him as my AL Rookie of the Year. And then my other one is, I said that Power is it was last year's starting pitching, which meant I thought Power would take a dip. that's obviously not happening. So, but I think I'm doing
pretty
well.
You forgot to specify in the Cal League.
Yes, exactly.
Because that's the only league where Power is down. And that's the Cal League, just to go on a mini prospect rant, the Cal League is always looked at as a hitter's league. It's not anymore. It's a pitcher's league because two of the top three hitter's parks are no longer around. Mm-hmm. So the Cal League is the pitcher's park. So wrap your head around that. It's still hard for me to do.
Let's move on and talk about Jose Ramirez, who's having quite a year, and I don't know if it's getting enough credit.
It's not.
You know, he has been near or on top of the monthly player rater over at ESPN pretty much all season long. Currently, for batters, he is, 10th. He's the 10th batter on the player rater right now. He's eligible at third base, second base, and the outfield. He's just putting together an all-around great season. What are your thoughts rest of the season and then going into next year on Jose Ramirez?
You have to love him. There's not a thing not to like about Jose Ramirez. You can kind of – I, for one, didn't call this happening, but you know, him becoming this offensive player wasn't really anything on my radar. I missed badly on him and on his left side of the infield buddy, Francisco Lindor, as – looking at their profiles and what they turn into in the major leagues. And, you know, maybe it's something with the Indians coaching staff. Maybe it's just their true talent showing. It's probably a combination. But the thing with Jose Ramirez is he does everything. He's a legitimate five-category guy. But what's the difference between him and Mookie Betts now? I mean, you look at the
– Mookie Betts only plays one position?
Right. And the benefit actually goes Ramirez's favor is because he's multi-position for now. I mean, next year he probably won't be. But – I mean, he's essentially what you drafted Mookie Betts to do, and Mookie Betts was taken in the first round.
Yeah,
that's how good he's been. I don't think the power stays this high, but I mean, last year he still slugged .462, which is still very respectable. But yeah, he only had 11 home runs, but he gets a lot of doubles and triples.
Here's the thing, though, about power, and I think this is, I mean, the league just sent out that memo or press release saying. Reassuring all the teams that there is no such thing as the juice ball is not a thing. I don't think anybody believes it.
Was Manfred wearing his tinfoil hat when he sent that out?
Yeah,
or?
But you got to think they're going to do something in the offseason to counteract that, right?
Yeah, I don't know what, though, but they'll do something.
I mean, they've got to figure out...
Racing the seams on the ball, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, well, Ben Lindbergh did a great piece a week or two ago.
I haven't read this yet. I need to check that
yeah,
out.
Yeah, go read it because it talks about the balls are different. The seams are higher. Or lower. I can't remember if it's higher.
Lower.
Yeah, lower.
Yeah.
And it's causing problems for pitchers health-wise, and we've seen it with Rich Hill and Aaron Sanchez and A number of other guys that are having, you know, cracked fingernails or just massive blister issues. So you got to think Major League Baseball does something about it. Though there is part of me that wonders if this isn't exactly what Major League Baseball wants in terms of, hey, more runs scored, more power. It's better for the game. Maybe they can get a new home run champ at some point that isn't tainted by steroids.
Maybe. I simply think all those consumers probably just thinking too much into it. I just think they switched manufacturers to save money on the baseballs, and it's different material.
Yeah.
And I think they both meet specs, but if anyone's familiar with, you know, any pretty much any job, the opposite ends of each spectrum in a spec are completely different. And you could swing one way to the other way, and you could have a different baseball, but still falls within the same standard that you use. It's still the same, according in your eyys, but it's really not. And, you know, that might be what we have here. Who knows?
Yeah.
I've heard that from somebody else. So, you know, I think that could very much be what's going on. But to say the baseballs are the same, they might be the same within spec, but there's no way.
Here's the one thing that we're going to have to kind of take into account is like rest of season projections. You know, for instance, you know, Jose Ramirez, Zips, and Steamer are virtually the same. It's 8-11, 8-9. Both have them around a 295 average.
Okay.
Now, I mean, are Steamer and Zips taking into account that he had never hit more than 11 home runs in a season last year? And not taking into account what the era of baseball is? And are we now being shortchanged, especially in the power department, in terms of projections?
It's possible, yeah, because they got to come from somewhere, right?
And I don't know enough about how projections, you know, projection systems like Zips and Steamer are made. Maybe this is a question for like a Todd Zola Eno Saris. Maybe I'll ask some of my fan graphs, brethren. Maybe I'll send a message over to like Podhorzer, because he does project. You know, he does his own projection system. But like, I wonder, like, is that taken into account? Because by all accounts, I mean, we're looking at a player who is on pace for 30 home runs and 18 stolen bases, but the projection systems put him at, you know, 23, you know, and the same amount of stolen bases. But they project him for a lesser average. They project him for, you know, lesser home runs.
Yeah, they should change more in season.
So, I don't know if it's taking into account the fact that we're living in a different age in terms of power right now.
I would assume they don't. But that would be something to ask them. But I think for next season, I think they have to.
Yeah. I think next season we're not going to have any idea, because who knows? It's not like they told us really that they were changing the baseball anyways. So if they change it back or they change it to try to accommodate, they're not going to tell us. We're just going to, you know, be left kind of out in the lurch.
I think for me and my personal rankings and how I view players, I'm just going to assume that it's not changing. I'm going to assume that this might kill me in a lot of leagues, to be honest, but I'm just going to assume that that it's the same batted ball environment as we have right now.
Okay. Where would you take Jose Ramirez next year?
I think he's a top 20 pick.
Wow.
I love this. I love the profile. I'm fully aware that I'm probably going to lose the multi-position eligibility.
Well, he's going to have second and third, because he's already got third wrapped up, and he's got 16 games at second halfway through the season.
Okay, well.
So, and I think that's really valuable, because middle infield wasn't quite as deep as we thought it was going to be.
No, we did not. It's not. And, he's a really hard player to evaluate. You have to just look at everybody there. But, I mean, like, in comparison to, like, I bring up Mookie Betts. Like, projections aren't going to have these two much different, right, next year? They can't be.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Let's do Would You Rather for next season.
Sure.
Next season, would you rather Jose Ramirez or Daniel Murphy?
Jose Ramirez.
I'm going to go Ramirez, and it's only because of the speed.
Mm-hmm. That's my thought to, my thought process as well.
You know, especially if speed doesn't take a tick up. Jose Ramirez or Carlos Correa?
Man, I would have lost a lot of money in this bet for my future self, but I'm going with Jose Ramirez.
I mean, Correa has stopped stealing altogether. Mm-hmm. He has no stolen bases this year.
Wonder if that's an organizational thing.
It must be, because it's not like he was necessarily. I mean, I don't think he had awful efficiency. He was 3-for-16 last year. And, you know, the year before in his rookie year, he was 4-for-14. But, I mean, he has no stolen base attempts this year.
That's
I mean, that's like Manny Machado level of decline.
Yeah, no,
that's we're putting you in the middle of the lineup. Do not run anymore.
I think you have to go
Jose Ramirez.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Which is, if I had not looked that up, I would not have said that. let's see, Corey Seager or Jose Ramirez?
Corey Seager, just because I think the power for him can grow a little bit more.
Xander Bogaerts or Jose Ramirez?
Jose Ramirez, and this one's not particularly close. I think if Xander Bogaerts isn't hitting for average, he's not much of an asset anyways. He's overpriced asset. I'm not a Bogaerts guy, so
a Bogaerts guy, and I think I'm going Ramirez. Cano?
Man, that's tough. I still go Cano, I think, because the power upside.
I'm going.
That's going to depend on roster construction.
Yeah, I'm going Ramirez, I think.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I think they'll be ranked pretty similar.
Like, I hate this because I don't want to overreact, but we're at this point in the season where it's like we're halfway through the season, and he's the number four middle infielder on the player radar, and you know you're going to put him ahead of Elvis Andrews, who's ahead of him. You're not going to put him above Turner. You're not going to put him above Altuve. So then you start pretty much going down the list of all the other guys, and I mean that's, you know... You know,
yeah.
I know we kind of crapped a little bit on Alex Chamberlain with the Aaron Nola stuff. Not really, but Alex Chamberlain found this guy. This was Alex Chamberlain's dude 2 years ago.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. And I wasn't crapping on him for the Nola thing. I was just using that as a reference, because he's, you know, it wasn't an illogical thought. He just took it to the extreme because it was his bold prediction article, which got to respect that. Yeah, and I think, but it wasn't unrealistic to predict that, and you give him all the props in the world for finding Jose Ramirez, because you're absolutely right. I think he definitely was the first on that. Yep. So good props for there.
Let's move on to Kent Maeda, who is having a a weird season so far this year. I mean, it's got to be frustrating for people who drafted Kent Maeda, because he got moved out of the rotation, but has keep kind of bouncing back and forth. He's putting up good starts and then awful starts. What are you doing if you own Kent Maeda?
I think he's a guy that I am picking up and streaming. So I probably wouldn't own him for long. I also told in the previous podcast, I don't really stream anymore. I think that's kind of, I used to play that way, but I don't think you can anymore with how frequent blowups are happening.
I agreed with you until I did the math on it.
Really? I'd be interested to see this.
Because
you have it handy.
Give me a sec. I'll bring it up. I haven't updated from the last three times I did it, but if you take my fan graphs, my Roto write-up streaming picks.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. The last one, I updated it last on the 27th of June. So I'm missing three starts, worth of streaming starts. My streaming picks at the Roto write-up, which are all guys who are less than 50% owned at CBS, so, you know, kind of the deeper player pool. 17 wins, 228 and a third innings,
okay.
204 strikeouts, a 3.70 ERA, a 1.27 WHIP.
Okay.
That's added to, I mean, and that's if you're in a daily moves league, you know, because obviously you can't stream every day. And I do 4 a week, 3 to 4 a week.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, these are all, I mean, you know, Jesse Hahn's in a bunch of these, Jarrell Cotton's in a bunch of these, so I've gotten some stinkers as well. but, I mean, I think you can, you just have to do it smartly, especially in a daily moves league.
Yeah, I'm just scared of all the blow-ups. But your data does help, because maybe I'm just picking wrong. I don't know. Because your data, you can't argue with that. It's good information to have, because I kind of wrote that off, and I kind of was using the tactic to where I would just add it. I was still kind of streaming, but I wasn't doing it every day. I'd pick up a guy for a start, and if I didn't see anybody I didn't like for the next few days, I would just ride out a middle reliever.
Well, and part of that is, like, you know, one of the differences between my streaming picks this year as opposed to last year is last year I would take one every single day. Like, I would pick one every single day for the Roto write-up.
I guess if there isn't one, there's no need to force it, right?
Yeah, and this year, I did for, like, the first month. I was, like, because people would get on my case, oh, you don't have a pick. And so, for the first month of the season, I was picking them. But after that, I was like, you know what? You can't do that. You can't just roster, you know, AJ Griffin and get, you know, not get any strikeouts, get creamed, you know, in your ratio categories. It's just not worth it. Sometimes the lower end of the slate sucks and you just can't do anything about it. You know, I mean, I forced a Daniel Megden in there one time and, you know, it cost me seven hits and 5 earned runs. And I got 1 strikeout. You know, and so, but I think, you know, if there are times in which you can do it, I think you have to be diligent about it. And I think too, I think one of the biggest mistakes with streamers and people that are in, like, in leagues with, like, weekly fab or maybe twice a week fab is always looking for the 2 start guys. And sometimes the 1 start guy with a really nice matchup is just better than the 2 star guys. And I think we're just conditioned at this point to go after the 2 star guys because that gives us the most strikeout upside. But if both those guys starts, he gets his head bashed in, it doesn't do you any good.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't pay much attention to the 1-2 star things because I literally am just looking for a guy for 1 start. There's no guarantee he's going to be on my roster all week. So I don't really play the 2 start game too much because all my leagues are daily leagues, luckily. And, so I have that luxury.
Here's the other thing. I think what people forget is that in a lot of leagues, there are still gems on the waiver wire for way too long. You know? So, sure. So if I go through kind of some of the names that have been on my streaming picks, Jordan Montgomery is having a great season. Mm-hmm. He was widely available. You know, Alex Wood multiple times. Trevor Cahill, you know, before he got injured, was fantastic, but still out on the waiver wire. Jeff Hoffman, you know, I used him on May 22nd for it. Jacob Faria, I used him on June 7th. You know, Mike Montgomery, I've used, I think, twice, and most recently last week. Under 50% well. Owned, you know? So,
yeah.
It's just a matter of using the right one. So, you know, and the only reason I, you know, kind of harp on this is because, you know, you and I talked about this, I think, last week or the week before, and we both said, yeah, I don't think you can stream anymore. And so I went and looked at my data from my streaming picks, and I was pretty impressed because, you know, 17 wins and 204 strikeouts with a decent ERA and WHIP, that's like getting, you know, at this point in the season, 2 kind of stud pitchers.
Sure is.
You know,
yeah.
How many pitchers have 100 strikeouts and 8 or 9 wins right now?
I'd be curious. Yeah, not a lot. I'd be curious to see. We know what the league ERA average is about 4.3, right? Like that's kind of where it's at for the overall Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So what's like the? I would be curious to see what's the average ERA for a pitcher that's rostered in a 12 team or a 15 team format would be. Because I think your numbers would easily beat what I would think those would be.
Well, Darius did some quick math on, like, the Playerator, and he said that like if you used my streamers, you pretty much would have gotten Marcus Stroman worth of value.
Like that tells you right there.
Like a top 32 starting pitcher, I think it was.
And that's awesome. So I think there's ways you can – yeah, that's a really good way to look at that because that changes my thought process on that. And it's don't force it, I guess, is a nice solid strategy for there. And like Kenta Maeda, like back to with him. Like don't force it. And with him, it adds another interesting wrinkle to it because you can't tell with the way the Dodgers are manipulating the DL, which is fairly obvious, right? Mm-hmm. You can't tell if he's actually really hurt or not because a lot of these injuries aren't arm injuries. And we knew about the arm issues when he signed that contract because he got 8 years at $24 million. I mean, mm-hmm. it's because of all the arms, which that kind of scares me away from him off the bat there. And I don't think he's this bad. I don't think the true talent level for him is a 4.56 ERA. But I don't really know what it is. I think last year was a little – I think he's somewhere – to take the cop out, I guess. I think he's somewhere around a 3.9 or 4 ERA true talent. And there's just a lot of variables going on with everything he's doing. He might be battling some sort of injury bug. But I get really scared of pitchers with injury whispers. I never really roster them. There might be a weakness of mine, admittedly, because I miss out on guys like, you know, who's a good example of that this year?
I think the Dodgers are obviously gaming the 10-day DL system.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're doing it with Maeda. And the only reason why is the contract. Because his contract states he gets $250,000 for every 10 innings pitch after 90 innings. Up to 200.
Oh, wow. So they're, okay.
And he also gets $1 million for his 15th, 20th, 25th, 30th, and 32nd start. If he wasn't hurt and they were just gaming him and gaming the system right now,
his agent
would be going nuts.
Agreed. I think that'd be public.
That's a lot of money.
That's a very nice fact to know because they would definitely be, you definitely know about that.
So I think there's definitely an injury, nagging injuries. It may not be serious, but I think there are definitely some sort of injury issues going on. I'm kind of looking and seeing if there's anything in, like his slider is just not good this year. Either his changeup, honestly.
No, he's in the fastball, he's kind of got a bad fastball too.
Yeah,
so.
it's not great. I'm wondering if he's throwing any pitches a whole lot less than he is. He's throwing his slider 4% less than that's his sinker. He's throwing his slider almost half of the amount of time he was last year.
Yeah, but also an interesting thing to add is he's throwing a cutter 22% of the time, so maybe sometimes the cutter is getting reclassified as a slider.
I think that's what it is. Yeah.
And also though, a thing I've said this a couple times. I might be weird for thinking it, but like cutters to me are a scary pitch for a guy to be overly reliant on. Because say you miss your location with a cutter, right? What is it basically? It's a batting practice fastball, right?
Yeah.
Because you're not throwing the cutter in changeup counts. It's a fastball that's an alternative to a four seam fastball. So you're throwing it in the same kind of counts, and if you miss your spot on that, it's typically about 4 or 5 miles an hour slower than the fastball. So mm-hmm. you miss a spot there, that pitch is going for a ride.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. And it's a touch and go pitch. It's a cutter is a very tough pitch to harness. Even try to throw it. If you mess around with a baseball, try to grip the cutter and try to throw it as hard as you can. It's a very, very tough pitch to master. So it's a scary pitch from a fantasy perspective because I think the risks are outweigh the rewards because it's a lot of times developed because a left-handed pitcher or a right-handed pitcher, left-handed pitcher can't get right-handed batters out or vice versa. So you need a different look, and it's kind of forced on guys too. So it's always a weird pitch from fantasy.
All right, let's move on and talk about the Giants closing situation.
Yay.
It seems to maybe have worked itself out a little bit. You know, originally Sam Dyson was the interim closer when Melanson went down with injury. But then Hunter Strickland got the first save. But since then, Dyson has looked really, really good and gotten the saves. Is Dyson the guy you're betting on?
I think so. For some reason, they don't want to give Hunter Strickland any save opportunities.
Hate Hunter Strickland.
Which I don't understand that, because I think he's probably one of the top 10 setup relievers in the game. Probably.
To quote Matthew Berry, I mean, they have a mott-like hatred for Hunter Strickland.
You can't argue with that, and maybe he's just a tough guy to deal with, because I wouldn't be shocked by that either.
Was that Buster Posey wouldn't go out and help him?
That's probably. But, I mean, it's not hard to imagine Sam Dyson having success, right? Because, I mean, what he did last year in Texas.
And the ballpark helps cover up some of that.
Sure. Yeah, a lot of the problems were home runs. And even if you're getting pounded by home runs, you're going to throw less strikes because you're, you know, less confident in your stuff. And the walks will go up. So we've seen a spike in the walk rate. Interestingly enough, I'm trying to find the walk rate data since he came over to San Francisco, and I'm struggling to find it. Give me a second, I'll get it for you.
I'm looking it up.
But
right
he's
now.
Looked better. He's looked better in the limited. I've seen him pitch like three times for the Giants, and he's looked a lot better than he did with Texas.
His walk rate is 2.89 since coming to San Francisco,
which is,
and he's not given up a home run.
What was it in Texas? Do you have that handy? Walk rate?
Yeah, it was 5.19.
There you go.
So that's quite pretty much cut it in half.
Yeah, no, he's looked a lot better. And yeah, obviously I still don't think he's your ultimate closer in the long term, which for the Giants he's not, so it doesn't matter. I think ultimately it's Melanson, and I think ultimately if Sam Dyson will probably be around for them real cheap again next year, because I think they have him at league minimum. I think he's still a cost controlled guy, as far as team control. Mm-hmm. So he's a hell of a find for them. Too bad. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't flip him. That'd be something I would look for them to do with them being out of it.
I would assume if he could put together another good 2 weeks, you know, they'll move him at the deadline. So someone will bite.
You have to. I wouldn't mind, to be honest, if my Cardinals grab somebody like this. They need a back.
I mean, unless Melanson's willing to waive his no trade, you know.
Which why would you if you were him?
Well, I mean, if you want to go win a championship,
You got to pick the litter at where to sign where 5 months ago, and you picked the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, but you probably signed there based on the idea that, one, they were giving him those money. He's still guaranteed that money, and two, that they were going to be winning.
Yeah, he's a tough player to move, being hurt and being owed $60 million, roughly 50, probably 50-something left.
But if the Giants are willing to eat part of that, you know, to just get rid of it.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know what their history is with eating money, but...
They've never been in this situation with trades. They
wrote out the Barry Zito deal. Didn't need anything on that.
Well, that's because no one would take that. If they had eaten 75% of the deals, nobody still would have taken it.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, he couldn't find a league minimum contract the next season.
Yeah, no, you're right. I don't know, but I think they got to flip Dyson, and just for that theory, I think you ride him out in fantasy now because he's getting that magical category saves. Mm-hmm. But until he's picked him up
in like three leagues.
Ride him out until he's not getting it anymore. Simple as that. I mean, it's not much analysis, but I mean that's what you have to do.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, let's move on and talk about the Rangers bullpen situation, because this one is kind of a mess. So Matt Busch loses the closing job. And the manager there has said that he is going to a bullpen without roles. Now, a lot of people believe that means that Keone Kella is going to get the role or get the majority of the saves going forward. But this appears to be a straight committee, at least for the time being. Who are you betting on?
That's tough. I mean, it sounds like Kella is getting the job. I've never seen this reported in this fashion, but when Kella, who hasn't been the closer previously, returns from injury, he's going to be the closer. Like, it just sounds weird to me. So I guess he's the guy you have to bet on. But I'm with you. I know who your guy is going to be, so mm-hmm. I'm not going to spoil it. I kind of think you're right, though. Because, number one, if he's healthy and doing the job, he's going to keep it. I know he struggled last night, but I think that's just kind of one of those fluky things that happens. And Texas isn't really playing for anything right now. They're as far as I'm concerned. No, they're pretty terrible, aren't they? Hold on.
Terrible, but that division is pretty bad after the Astros.
It is.
So they're actually kind of in it. Like, the whole division is, I believe, I mean, I'm going to double check the standings real quick, but I believe the whole division is pretty much, except for the A's, are pretty much like around 500.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're actually kind of quasi
in the wild card race.
So, you know, and I mean, they've got the offense at least in a couple of the pitching pieces. If Hamels can kind of figure things out and they can get anything from Cashner and Ross.
I'm going with your guy for this closer role, though, because historically he does walk too many guys, but he limits home runs
limits
and gives
damage,
up and racks up strikeouts. So Jose Leclerc is my guy yours.
He's my guy too. I mean, if Kella was completely healthy, I would probably kind of, you know, go for him. And I think if he is healthy, you know, he will get the role. But I think that's a big if right now.
I just, like I said, I think it's really strange that that's the report. He hasn't been the closer yet, which keep that in mind, which is important. But he's out with a bicep injury. But when he comes back, he's going to be the guy. What?
Yeah, it just it doesn't make sense. And I mean, this is a guy who has had some serious makeup concerns. I mean, he was sent down to AAA this year because of actions that happened in a spring training B game where he just decided he wasn't going to pitch, I believe is exactly what happened.
Yeah, that's
because
kind
he
of
didn't
similar
want to
lines
there.
Of what I've heard. Yeah, didn't want to be there.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, this isn't a guy, like, with great makeup to begin with, and now he's physically got something wrong with him in his pitching arm. I know it's considered a day-to-day issue and it's tendonitis, but how often have we seen, like, these bicep tendonitis or tricep tendonitis turn into being a little bit something more? I think Leclerc is the guy. Strikes out a ton of people. Yes, he walks too many guys, but he limits the damage because he doesn't give it up, doesn't give up many home runs. And I mean, his strikeout rate is 14.25, you know, 0.25/9 right now. I mean, that's insane. And I think he's the guy. Honestly, I think Matt Bush is the guy once Matt Bush is healthy, because Matt Bush is obviously hurt right
Agreed.
Now.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I'm gonna make my bet on the guy who's actually pitching, and that's Jose Leclerc.
Agreed. I like your logic on that. That last statement's being the key. The healthy guy.
You know, typically in fantasy baseball, we want to go with skills, not roles. And you know, it's typically
except for the closer position.
Yes, except for the person who has the job and is pitching. Like, I mean, to me, it's like I everybody was going crazy on Twitter, and it's like this guy's not on the field. Like, he's not pitching. You can't bet on the guy who's not pitching.
No, I agree with you 100%. And I think, like, to do a little dynasty spin on any of this, we talked about the Giants with Hunter Strickland, and they got a couple arms back there, Derek Law, Kyle Crick, and then Texas with Leclerc and Matt Bush and Keon Akella. Pretty much, I think all the Texas guys need to be owned in dynasty leagues, right? And probably Strickland?
Like, in terms of, I mean, in just a straight saves league?
Straight saves league, because you
like
might.
Saves and holds or saves?
Saves and holds, sorry.
Saves and holds, Strickland is a guy I'm owning. Bush is a guy I'm owning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not owning anybody else.
Okay.
And here's the reason. One, in a saves and holds league, the value of saves goes down quite a bit.
Yes.
And, like, I know at the end of the day, Hunter Strickland is going to have a role which gets him either saves or holds. It's most likely holds. Matt Bush, same way. Once he's healthy, he's going to get saves or holds. But in Dynasty, it just changes too much. I mean, Jeff Zimmerman did a great piece at the beginning of the year that talked about 40% of closers lose their job before the end of the year. And so, like, now you're going to project that out 2 years, 2-3 years. You're talking about, like, just a huge turnover margin, you know, years down the road.
Yeah.
I in Dynasty and Keeper Leagues, I never invest.
Yeah,
In holds guys or saves guys. Whereas I go against, like, that wisdom in a redraft where I will invest in those guys.
Yeah, I like your line of thinking there. I think in a Dynasty with keeper and with in a keeper league, dynasty or keeper, big huge keeper format with saves and holds. I think in a dynasty league, you can get away with rostering. I think Leclerc amongst this group also long term. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I just turn and burn these guys nonstop.
You have to. Yeah, you have to. But I mean, in a saves and hold league, you're still getting value out of these guys. So I agree with you. I just wanted to make a point because I keep getting questions on Twitter about like what relievers in my dynasty league should I stash. I'm honestly, none.
Unless
they have the job. Zach Birdie, a guy I like is Carl Edwards for the Cubs. I think ultimately
here's the thing that like, you know, for those people asking Matt this question, is at the end of the day, there's no rhyme or reason to what managers are going to do at the closing position. I mean, if you had asked me, you know, last year at this time, who the Twins reliever to own was, I would never would have gotten to Kinsler. I would have guessed like 30 names.
To.
Like, you know, Trevor May and Alex Meyer and Nick Birdie. And, you know, I mean, I would have gone through just a, you know, even at the beginning of this season, if you had asked, you know, I mean, I literally rostered every Twins closing option there was in my NFBC league. Just because, like, I was like, okay, I'm going to get the Twins closer. I have no idea who it's going to be, you know. But I didn't think he was going to be Kinsler the rest of the way. And he's been fantastic, and he's held on to the job in spite of the fact that he owns none of kind of like the real things we look for in a closer, except for he has the job.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I liken closers a lot to catching prospects.
Yeah.
There's more that goes into it than just the numbers.
No, catching prospects and relief pitching prospects in Dynasty are a fool's errand.
I 100% agree.
All right, let's move on to Jordan Montgomery. You mentioned him earlier in the show, and he is he's been really, really good this year. Are you buying it?
I am. I have, actually. I have in a lot of leagues already bought him. I like the biggest thing for me, the downward plane. Scouting reports on him were a bit off. I do think the slider is a lot better than advertised. Looking at his pitch mix is a thing of beauty. Five pitches he throws over 13% of the time, which I can't think of a pitcher off the top of my head that really does that. It's a real well-defined, well-mixed thing of pitches. Truly throws any pitch in any count. And Yankee Stadium, not a great place to pitch. He seems to be all right. The command has always been a thing with him. He's a safe bet for a quality start pretty much every night out there, it seems like. I know hasn't gone to be true, but I mean, before this year in the minor leagues, he had a streak of like not allowing more than 3 earned runs, and it was some odd like 40 starts in a row or something in the minor leagues. It was something crazy. He's never flashy, doesn't have the big thing you look for. He's tall. That's the best asset he had for a pitching prospect, really, to be honest. 6'6" lefty, big downward plane on the fastball, because not only to being tall, the release point is one of the highest in the league. So he gets a lot of limits home runs that way. The ball coming out of a downward angle, obviously. You have to love what you've seen with Montgomery, though, especially in a tough park. In the American League, it's been great. He's been a godsend for me in a lot of leagues. There's a stability at the back end of your fantasy rotation that has been very, very hard to find.
I like the slider. I really like the curveball.
The changeup
has been really, really good.
Everything's good.
He's getting his swing and strike rate is 13.5%. He's getting on top of hitters. His O swing percentage, 37%.
That's outstanding.
I mean, he's getting guys chasing out of the zone, which he doesn't have a great fastball, so he's going to have to do. And I know a lot of people, you know, are concerned about, you know, starting pitchers in Yankee Stadium, but lefties seem to really do just fine there.
Yeah, you know? And that's a weird thing because they shouldn't.
Yeah, but, I mean, but so far so good. I mean, look at what CC Sabathia has done. Look at what Montgomery's doing. You know, lefties are seemingly doing fairly well there. I love the profile. He's one of those guys that is extremely under-owned. I picked him up in a couple leagues last week to stream him, and now I'm just holding on to him.
From a prospect, you know, I'm breaking the prospect scene and follow a lot with all that stuff, and the success of Montgomery has really changed the way I look at pitching prospects like him, because you get a guy like take Andrew Moore, for example, for the Mariners, right? Kind of the same type of pitcher coming up. No real big out pitch, but nice mix of pitches, four or five offerings that he can throw any count. He came up with the
major control.
Yes, really, yes. And he limits home runs throughout the minor leagues. Came up this year, it's only one start, but he threw four pitches 8% of the time or more. Like, that's good.
Yeah.
For especially
well, it's
a
one
small
of the reasons
like
we
that.
Like a guy like Luke Weaver. You know,
yes.
He doesn't have an overpowering stuff, but he's a guy that you really feel like he's got good control of the strike zone. He knows what he's doing. He's got enough pitches that are at least average that he you're not going to be able to just sit on one particular pitch and just wait for it.
No, I think that's a nice comparison as well. And he gets the National League, which is nice too.
Yeah.
But yeah, Andrew Moore for the Mariners, not, you know, he's not a high profile guy by any means, not going to make anybody's top 100 list. But he'll be in my top 200 just because I like guys like him. He fits the Montgomery mold, and I'm not letting guys like that slip by me again this year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. All right, let's talk real quick about these last two guys. One is Scooter Gennett, who, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people laughed at some of the people who picked up Scooter Gennett after his huge, like, record-breaking day. But the people who are still laughing are the ones who've owned Scooter Gennett over the course of the last month, because he has just absolutely crushed the ball so far this season, or so far over the course of the last 30 days. He's 13th out of hitters on the player radar over the last 30 days.
Wow.
I mean, he's for the year, he is hitting 302, 350, 571 with 12 home runs.
That's, for context, his career high is 14, and he's had more than half as few at-bats he took in that year to get it.
And I would just like to say, 2 years ago, I called a Scooter Gennett breakout, and this asshole waited 2 years to fucking prove me right.
He was always a weird player in Milwaukee. Like, he's not nearly the type of presence he is now, I'll tell you that.
No, but. I mean, he's doing way different things than he was.
Mm-hmm. He's not the same player at all. No, that's very fair to say, yeah.
You know, but are you buying us?
As far as what, though? I mean, yeah, I'm buying it, ride it out for the rest of this year, and I don't know what the Reds' plans are. The Reds are pretty packed at second base. I want to go on record. I hate Jose Peraza. They like him. I can't stand him. Doesn't walk. Has the fewest. I was reading, you know, there's a lot of nice. Casey Bogeslaw has a lot of, on Twitter that I follow, does a lot of work with barrels. And he is last in barrels and walk rate this year amongst qualified hitters. So that basically tells you he's one of the worst hitters, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't offer you anything with the glove. Does speed, but got to get on base for that stuff. I'm not a Peraza guy. I wasn't going into this year. Sorry, Mike. But Peraza is just not the guy for me at all. I still like Billy Hamilton because, I mean, he's doing what he's been advertised to do. If you expect anything other than that, that's on you. And I do think Gennett has an opening at second base until Shed Long comes up, and it's kind of the perfect time because Long is going to need another year after this year, and it's perfect to ride out a low for the Reds to ride out a low-cost option like Gennett until that time happens. So I think you have to buy. I think he's going to get the playing time.
I don't believe he will get the playing time. Only because I think he gets moved. I think he becomes like a bench bat.
He would be in any other team pretty much.
You know, I mean, I think that's what most people are going to buy him for. I'm looking up his contract status real quick because I want to say he is in the last year of his arbitration. But I'm not 100% sure on that.
He's, I think you're right. He's second base eligible.
He's arbitration eligible through 2019. Wow.
Okay.
I would have figured he was older? Ready to, yeah.
Yeah, he's only 27.
So I guess that's about right.
He's second base eligible, outfield eligible. He'll probably have third base eligible before the end of the season.
There was rumors today that Zach Cozart could be Zach Cozart and the Reds are both interested in a long term deal, which you would assume would move Peraza over to second.
For me, it would move Peraza out of town, but, you know.
I don't think they're going to do that after what they gave up to get him.
No, probably not.
They're going to give. I know Peraza hasn't been great, but it's not like he's been atrocious.
He kind of has.
I mean, you know, in this day and age, a 250 average isn't bad.
No. 276 OBP is.
Yeah, but I mean, this is a team that has hit Billy Hamilton on top of the lineup in spite of the fact he's got a sub-300 average. OBP, I mean.
0.078 ISO.
Yeah, but they don't care about that. They're a team that pushes it on the base paths. You know?
Yeah, you're right.
So, I mean, to me, like, if Jose Peraza was on a different team, yes, he's a utility infielder. But he's not. He's on the Reds, and they gave up Todd Frazier, who had just won them the home run derby, to go get them. Like the face of like the franchise outside of Votto at the time. Like one of the most popular guys in town. They're not just going to give up on the kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, these are, you know, we can look at the numbers all we want, but at the end of the day, you know, not ownership, but management has to answer to someone, you know. If they 1 year later decide Jose Peraza isn't the thing, but Scooter Gennett is, I think there are going to be some people who are pretty upset.
That's valid.
So, I mean, I think Gennett gets moved. I mean, he'd be like, I'm trying to think of like a really good fit for Gennett. Houston already's got a guy like that. What about like New York?
Yeah, I can see it.
Like, you know, they're a team that's dealing with some injuries. He could fill in at second, you know, while Castro moves his way in. Then he could go over, play third, you know, and kind of knock out Headley if they're not willing to go pay the price on Moustakas, or even just be a util guy around the infield.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good fit.
You know, and I mean, if Jeanette ended there, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily hate that move for him.
No, I mean, the obvious replacement is Rob Refsnyder has been kind of crap in that role for them.
Yeah. So. And he's a lefty in Yankee Stadium.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so, I like that fit.
Yeah.
Maybe Toronto to get at-bats for Devin Travis.
Devin Travis never getting at-bats.
Well, you know what I mean. The fill in.
Yeah, fill in while he's on the DL for the rest of the year, off and on. All right. Let's talk about Josh Reddick. I mentioned him earlier as a guy I picked up recently in a couple of leagues because he's been just absolutely on fire. What do you see rest of the way from Josh Reddick?
483 his last 10 games. That's pretty good. Two home runs, surprisingly four steals. He's running a little bit more than I thought, which kind of goes against our Houston Astros organizational philosophy of maybe not running. But he's healthy. He's always been good. He battled injuries a lot. Remember how highly touted of a prospect he was coming up with Boston? I think people might forget that. He's been traded to Oakland, traded to LA. Now he ends up in Houston. Nice free agent contract. Really good defensive player in the outfield, which is going to raise the floor because he's going to play more. Again, and for lack of a better thing, I mean, he's hitting the crap out of the ball. Maybe if you have, it's a daily league, so that, if that would help, you can kind of sit him against lefties, but you have to play him.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons why he may be running a little bit more than, you know, a guy like Correa is because they've got him batting first or second most of the time.
Yeah, that's very true. So, he's been a really good team. He's been another underrated asset for that team. No one talks about him, but he's been great.
Well, yeah, and I mean, the fact that, I mean, I know you say sit him against lefties. He's hitting .324 against lefties right now for the year. And it's a small sample.
Sure. But, traditionally, he hasn't been well. Yeah, but, hey, if he's doing it now, you got to ride it out.
You know, and I mean, as long as he's hitting well, they're going to keep batting him towards the top of the lineup. And that's a lineup you want a guy on. Like, sure.
To fix the Houston lineup right now.
Yeah, so. Houston has five All-Stars this year, and well-deserved. It's a really potent lineup, and I think... You know, I just picked him up in the Barf League. I believe I picked him up in the 3-Sport League, which is a 14-team league. Barf is a 12-team league. So he's pretty widely available for no apparent reason. You know, injuries have always been an issue for Reddick. You know, if he's healthy, he's usually pretty good. And I think maybe we discounted the fact that he moved from, you know, the Athletics organization. you know, in terms of the kind of numbers he could put up now in a full season. But it's looking pretty good. I mean, he's on pace to put up the same kind of power numbers he put up in 2015 in Oakland, but with added speed, which is it was a real bonus. So I think Reddick is a guy that is pretty easily available either on your waiver wire or via trade that people should really go out and get, because right now he's healthy, and they're doing a good job keeping him that way.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. Not a valid point leaving Oakland. That might be the best thing to happen to him.
Yeah. So, yeah, right now they've roster resource has him batting second. That's where he's been batting most of the time. And they're saying he's platooning, but he doesn't seem to be platooning that much. All right, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Went a little bit longer.
Because
we deep dived into some, you know, topics like string pictures and the All-Star game that we didn't necessarily plan on doing. But I thought they were kind of interesting discussions. Hopefully people liked them.
They always are, man. We always kind of veer off, but I think that's always for the better.
Yeah, when there's just two of us, we might as well.
Yeah, why not?
So, all right, Matt, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
MD Temp FWFB prospect list will drop shortly after the holiday. We've got pretty much done just trying to figure out formatting things to go with all of that. So look for that at the site. I should have a prospect pod coming out with Mike and Andy here soon. Hopefully this week we can get one out. And yeah, other than that, I've been entrusted to raise a puppy now, so hopefully that goes well.
Have you named the puppy yet?
It is a girl, and we have not.
Tweet your puppy, girl puppy name.
It's a black lab for reference.
Yes, black lab. To Matt at MD Top FWFB. The more vulgar, the better.
My father-in-law suggested Wrigley, and I about punched him in the face. So
that's really funny. Actually.
My future father-in-law, I should say.
You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read anything I'm writing over on Fangraphs, where I write 4 to 5 days a week, or on Friends of Fantasy Benefits, where I write occasionally. I'm going to have an article, a couple football articles coming out pretty soon. I think I'm going to do an article, maybe like a updated trading piece over on FWFB. Right now on Fangraphs, I'm doing the Roto write-ups, but also be doing kind of some mid-season review type stuff, review kind of where I'm at in my industry leagues, review where I'm at in my bold predictions, stuff like that, talk a little bit about that kind of stuff. Then I'm going on vacation here in about 2 weeks, so you'll get a week of no me. And I apologize if that means lesser podcasts. We will try to fill the void, but sometimes when I'm not around, less stuff gets out. So
you know what they say when the boss is away, right?
Yeah, exactly. Everybody else takes a vacation too. please give us a rate and review on iTunes. It really, really helps us out, especially if it's the 5-star variety. If you do that, that will get you entered in to win some of our free swag at Friends of Fantasy Benefits. We've given away a number of shirts so far. Mike's got some mugs he's going to be sending out. I got a t-shirt I owe someone. Oh, shoot. I owe someone a t-shirt for being my 1,000th follow on Twitter.
Ooh, gotta get that to him.
I think his name's Tim. Tim, I'm sorry. It's coming out to you pretty quick. Big shout out to the RotoWare company, RotoWare.com.
Yeah, man.
Hooked me and Matt up with a free t-shirt, and then I won a bet, so I'm getting another free t-shirt.
Can't recommend them enough, man. Yeah. High quality t-shirts. They're really great.
Yeah, good stuff. We're not getting paid. They're not our sponsor. We're just giving them a shout out because they hooked us up, and we like the kind of stuff they're doing over there. Kenneth over there is doing a fantastic job. And then last but not least, nominate us for a podcast award. You can go to podcastawards.com. Go to the sports section, scroll down to us, Friends of Fantasy Benefits /baseball, and nominate us. That way we have a shot to maybe win a podcast award. It really
that'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool. If we get nominated, one of us is going to have to fly out for it. So we'll rock, paper, scissors on that one.
Where's it at?
No idea.
Okay, well, if it's somewhere warm and tropical, I'll put my name in the hat.
Yeah, it'll probably be close. It'll probably be closest to like Eli. I'm guessing it'll be like New York or something like that. But
probably,
you know, yeah, if we get nominated, you know, one of us is going to have to fly out there. It'll probably
sounds
be
good.
So
perfect timing. Perfect timing on the end of this podcast. The little puppy's waking up. We got to take her outside.
All right, Wrigley.
Puppy to be named later.
All right, Wrigley. You have a good one. That's going to wrap us up for Matt and myself. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.